Mini episode 289 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 289. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. Got another great one coming for you right now. We've had this gentleman on with us a bunch of times previously on the program. We're pleased to be able to have the great conversations with him that we have. We've had on his co-host on one occasion, Joe Benigno, most memorably, if you go check it out, the FDH Lounge Ultimate Anthology, where he berated me for the fact that I have the Miami Dolphins as the 1A football team to my Cleveland Browns. The conversations with Evan have not been quite as contentious, but they have been every bit as entertaining, dare I say, if not more so. Always a pleasure to have this guy on the program here. You can talk any number of things with him. And today, we're going to be looking at the NFL season that is upcoming, getting a look at that, as well as a passion of his that is also a passion of mine, the pro drafts. We got SummerSlam coming right around the corner. We just had the last real big event during the year. There have been some pay-per-views since, but the last real big one was in his home market, WrestleMania 29. Be curious to see what he thought of that one, if he was kind of left wanting about that as I was. But we'll be getting into that in a little bit. First, talking some NFL with good friend Evan Roberts of WFAN, midday co-host in New York. Evan, welcome to the program, my man. How are you today?
I'm great. Do you want me to berate you the way Joe did? Because I can if you want me to.
Oh, I know that you probably can. Again, he really got my goat on that occasion. The reason that he got my goat is that we also had on your favorite caller and mine, Ira from Staten Island, and I felt like he kind of trampled Ira's time, but it was entertaining getting me all red in the face as he was about that. I take it you subscribe to the notion also you can't have a secondary team.
He is 1,000% right. How is it possible to root for two teams? The only way you can root for two teams is if you have a son and your son gets to the NFL and you're like I'm a diehard Jet fan. If I have a kid and the kid gets drafted by the San Diego Chargers, I get it. I understand it. But that, to root for two teams, I hate to sound like Beningo. I hate to trample you. You are a fool, my friend.
Well, Evan, again, though, he was pretending that I would be conflicted under the circumstances. He wasn't listening to me. And I'll tell you right now, Browns and the Dolphins are playing week one. I'm rooting for the Browns. So I do have a hierarchy here. Does that matter at all?
That's a little bit better. And I will give you this nugget because you mentioned Ian Eagle. Ian Eagle right now is very, very, very upset at me. I betrayed Ian Eagle in a bad way. Every single year I go to his broadcasting camp and I'm a guest counselor. It's one of my favorite things to do. And about a week ago, I forgot about it. Like, I was supposed to do it. I overslept. I didn't even think about it. And I got that phone call from Ian at about 9:30 saying, Evan, are you close? Meanwhile, I'm in my pajamas, like, just waking up. And I had to tell Ian Eagle, I forgot. And it wasn't anger. The disappointment in Ian Eagle's voice was so bad that I felt compelled to send him I'm sorry card 2 days later. I'm still mending the fences with Ian. So when I hear the name Ian Eagle, I get very emotional because I feel horrible for what I did.
Well, you know him a lot better than I do, but from his one appearance on the show recently here, seemed to be a very nice guy. I guess I'll start there since we're talking NFL. I got him to co-sign on this notion that I had, same as Rick Bucher when he was on previously. I want to see if you subscribe to this as well, Evan. And if somebody puts a gun to your head and says, name the NFL rivalry of the 2010s, I say 49ers Seahawks. Do you agree with those who agree with me?
Looking ahead to the 2010s, I think you're right. I think we are seeing the end of one of my favorite rivalries were the Ravens and the Steelers, mainly because they play the game the way I love it, that hard nose, hit you in the mouth, defensive struggles. But I think we're seeing the decline of the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're seeing the decline of the Ravens, even though they won the Super Bowl last year. They lost a lot. They lost their heart. If you look at the future of quarterbacks in the NFL, Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick are the prototype future quarterbacks. So I think if I had to guess and be fair about it, and I mean, I don't want to jump on the Seahawks bandwagon that much. I think based on the type of quarterbacks that they have running their franchises, I think that's a pretty good bet that that's your new age rivalry that I think most of us fans are going to enjoy.
Okay, and that'll be very interesting, too, because we haven't really seen these ones where both ends of the rivalry are in the Western time zone. I mean, I guess the closest would be, you know, you had Dallas and the 49ers in the 90s. You had, you know, the 49ers and the 49ers and the Redskins and the Giants, sort of a three-way dance back in the 80s. But 49ers, Seahawks, we don't often tend to pay much attention on a national level. And who would know better than you based in New York? That's going to be really interesting if those are the two most compelling teams, aren't they? Because from a media standpoint, it's going to be a little more challenging for everybody staying on top of them.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely – I mean, I'll be the first one to admit living in the East Coast, there's an East Coast bias. We care more about – you know, like I always thought Yankees-Red Sox was overblown, and we lived in New York. And I understand that here in New York we hate the Red Sox, Red Sox fans hate the Yankees, but I never really figured that the people outside of the Northeast corridor really cared that much about the Red Sox and the Yankees. But the beautiful thing about the NFL, I really think, I don't know if geography is that big of a deal. I think that people watch any football game, and if you've got two compelling football teams, I don't think it matters that one market is Seattle and they don't exactly have the greatest, most rich football history. Also, you don't have 10 o'clock games. I think that's one thing that hurts baseball teams out west and NBA teams out west. Got games that start at 10:30, nobody able to watch it. In the NFL, other than that first Monday night game, that second of the doubleheader, everybody can watch everything. So I don't think the East Coast bias affects the NFL as much as it does other sports. But, I mean, look, if Russell Wilson continues to improve as a quarterback, if the Seahawks and Niners are at the top of the NFC for the next 5 to 10 years, it's only natural that they're going to be the best rivalry in the NFL.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what it comes back to a lot of times is the talent level of quarterback. And as you're looking at it, when you see, obviously, in your market, and this might be a little bit of a sore subject, but the sort of receding back to the pack of the Jets the last year or two, the fact that you still have the Patriots there, but you have the Broncos and the Texans, I think a lot of people would say, kind of standing out in the AFC this year. Do you agree with what also seems to be a popular notion, NFC deeper? You not only have the recent NFC champions in the bunch, there are teams that have been to the Super Bowl in recent years, but the Falcons lurking right behind, the Seahawks. Are you in agreement with that notion that it's going to be tougher to come out of the NFC this year?
Oh, there's no question about it. And I think in general, you know, not to put the Texans in this category, but the Texans have a lot to prove in the playoffs. The AFC seems like a declining conference with their better teams. I mean, I mentioned the Steelers and Ravens have already shown, not the Ravens yet, obviously, but they will show they're on the decline. The Steelers have. The Broncos are still relying on an older quarterback who has a neck issue. And while I think the Patriots are going to be fine, I mean, I still think they win 11, 12 games with the help of the fact that the AFC East is terrible. I don't think the Dolphins are that good. My team, the Jets, stink. I don't think Buffalo's that good. The Patriots, obviously with all the hits they've taken and the age of Tom Brady, they're sort of looking like they're on the decline. So I think the AFC is the weaker conference, but it allows more of an opportunity for that surprise team in the AFC, for that team that maybe nobody's thinking about right now. While in the NFC, I mean, the Packers are going to be great because of the quarterback. I think the Saints will be a lot better this year having their head coach back. You mentioned the Niners and Seahawks that seem to be more on the rise. So I think just in general, the NFC looks like a deeper and, you know, just a better conference than the AFC.
Absolutely, yeah. And as far as any surprise teams coming out of the AFC, I'm not delusional enough to think that my Cleveland Browns would be in the mix there. But, yeah, it's you're right that there probably is a little bit more room for somebody to make a real big run there. My sense personally is Houston busting through the pack, making it to the Super Bowl. I have them coming up short to the 49ers. But again, you know, as you said, there are a lot of people who doubt them. Given what they would have to go through to get there, and given that, again, as you said, Peyton Manning, we're not really talking about his neck anymore, but a guy who could still be one hit away on that. How skeptical are you of the Texans when you look at the landscape?
Well, I think the biggest problem with the Texans and the biggest question about the Texans is the quarterback. I mean, this is still, for the most part, an elite quarterback world. I mean, I understand that Colin Kaepernick was able to get there, but we see the tools, we see the talent that he has. And I think Joe Flacco's always shown he's a real good quarterback. I think he's gotten a bad rap the last couple of years. And now, finally, with the championship, I think he certainly got the contract he deserves. I think the big question in Houston is the quarterback. Is the quarterback good enough to go toe-to-toe and beat Tom Brady in the playoffs, to beat Peyton Manning in the playoffs? And I think that's going to be the big question about them. But they definitely – I mean, look, they've got the best defensive player on the planet in my mind, and they definitely have a lot of talent there. But this is still a quarterback's league, and I think that's – that and the lack of postseason success, I think, are the two big questions on why – I look at them, and they're definitely talented, and I kind of want to pull the trigger on them and say, hey, they're coming out of the AFC. But those are the two things that scare me about them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree about that. Again, they're going to get Brian Cushing back. That was a big loss that they had last year. They've made some more moves to try to upgrade the number two wide receiver spot, which has been kind of a gaping hole for them. So, yeah, there's always a good chance for them when you look at that. But as you said, there are some recent history things kind of mitigating against them. As I said, I'm looking at it 49ers over Texans. That's my early pick for the Super Bowl. Do you have any kind of a sense yet, or are you still kind of formulating that?
Boy, I got to tell you, it's difficult. I mean, a part of me wants to go back to the Green Bay well and say they get back to the Super Bowl. You know, the other thing that scares me, whenever we get down on the Giants in New York, that's the year they shock all of us and go out and win a Super Bowl, which has now happened twice in the last bunch of years. I'm skeptical of San Francisco only because history has proven it is so difficult to go to the Super Bowl, lose the big game, and then come back the next year and do it again. I mean, you look at the history of the NFL over the last 30 years, it's proved nearly impossible to be nearly as good that following season after a big disappointment. So that's the thing that kind of makes me skeptical about them. I probably my first reaction has me leaning towards Green Bay, especially because I just think Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback on the planet. You know, even with Peyton Manning proving he was healthy last year, I got to pick one quarterback in the world to win a game. I'm still probably taking Aaron Rodgers, but I'm excited, and, you know, maybe I'm one of the few guys to think this. I'm actually excited to watch these preseason games because I'll get a better idea of what these teams have. And maybe I'm being brainwashed already by Hard Knocks, but I watched the first episode, and I'm thinking, you know what, the Bengals, you know, maybe this is the year they finally break through. But I find myself always getting brainwashed by that dopey show.
You know what, it might be more to it than that, though, because, again, I would agree with you. The Bengals, to me, look like the team that's really on the rise in the AFC North. I could see the other powers in there, the Steelers and the Ravens both making the playoffs just because in the AFC, you know, just sort of process of elimination, you know. But I would tend to agree with you on the Bengals. They've really been doing a pretty good job putting it together the last couple of years, adding pieces. Tyler Eifert is going to give them a really strong two tight end setup. But if you're looking at the Bengals, particularly you go back to that wild card game last year, isn't it the same thing with what you said about the Texans? There have to be pronounced doubts about Andy Dalton getting it done in January and February.
Absolutely. That's probably the reason I refuse to go all the way with it and say this is the year the Bengals finally, you know, break through and not only make the playoffs again, but go out and get to a Super Bowl. Because even though I'm a redhead, and we always support our fellow redheads, and the Red Rock definitely has my complete support, I mean, he's got a lot to prove, but he's still a very young quarterback. He can only get better. He has postseason experience now under his belt, and they got good continuity on that team. I mean, you mentioned Eifert. They also drafted the running back from North Carolina, which gives them depth at that position. But for the most part, they're a very similar team to what they were the year before, and I think in a way continuity helps you a lot. But the mediocrity of that conference, maybe in that division for that matter, may be the biggest thing that helps them going forward.
Great point about Giovanni Bernard. I really think he's going to be the focal point of the running offense as the season goes along here. He gives some pop that the law firm really just can't at this stage of the game. That's a great point about him. And, yeah, you know, you talk about redheads. That looks like a natural segue point. Not a great week for a very famous big redhead in this country, Sheamus, going down 4 to 6 months with a shoulder injury. More alarming for him, perhaps, might be the case of creative has nothing for you-itis, which I think is a little bit worse for the career than a shoulder injury that he'll surely get through. That looks like a guy that just looks pretty stale to me. Do you agree, Evan?
Yeah, it pains me to say it because, again, I want to support my fellow redhead, but I was even going to say it before you said it. The injury stinks, and I feel bad for the guy, But the biggest injury was the fact that he's been kind of stuck in quicksand for how long now? I mean, he had the big push. Look, he's one of the guys, and I think we could say this about a lot of guys, they're just better as bad guys. You know, they make some of these heels good too quickly, and it's lame. I mean, you saw what happened to Alberto Del Rio. It was I couldn't even keep a straight face when they were trying to make this guy a good guy. They do it way too often. I'm still bitter they did it with John Cena, and I know it's been like a decade now, but that SOB was actually a damn good heel. I mean, people forget it, but when he did that rapping stuff, I actually kind of liked him. So I think the biggest thing that they did to the big redhead is they made him a good guy, and he became so corny. He made these lame jokes. They weren't funny. He was sarcastic. It's like, stop it already. So hopefully, as he recovers, creative will recover, and they'll realize that he's just one of those guys that shouldn't be making jokes. He shouldn't try to be funny. He shouldn't placate the fans. He should just be a badass who kicks ass. That's it.
I agree with that. This next name I'm going to throw out may be a point of contention, though, because as a smart mark in good standing, I have been saying for a long time, I think Dolph Ziggler has maybe franchise face qualities here. And again, there have been some ups and downs with everything with him thus far since he turned, but it did seem like a brilliant double turn that they did with him and Del Rio, who, you're right, needed to get back on that side of the fence. Ziggler got, I don't think they'd say cheered out of the building. I don't think that's exactly a phrase, but whatever it is, the night after WrestleMania when he cashed in to win the world title right there in the metro New York area. So I know New York loves Ziggler, and sometimes you got to take the big markets out of it and look at the country as a whole. But that, to me, is a real indication of how big he can be. Do you agree?
Oh, and you know what's funny about that? I'll take it back even further. And maybe it has a lot to do with Cena, but when he fought Cena at the pay-per-view in Brooklyn, I think it was Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. I don't remember what the hell it was called, but I was there. And maybe it's anti-Cena. I very well could be it, but he was over with the Brooklyn faithful on that night. And when the turn occurred, which was so obvious, it was very obvious when John Cena was thrown off the top of the ladder and we all saw it coming, the crowd was cheering. The crowd was pumped up because, and again, maybe they don't like Cena and maybe it's not as much liking Ziggler, but the problem is most guys are better as bad guys. I'm not sure what he is, but like CM Punk, all right? And I guess he's still technically a tweener, but I think guys like Dolph and guys like CM Punk, if you want to make them sort of good guys, almost go with the tweener aspect, because when they try to be full-fledged good guys, it just comes across so weak. I mean, Randy Orton is a good guy. He's been a disaster, and I'm glad they're kind of putting him in that tweener-to-bad-guy role. I think it takes a lot more, and I think a lot of wrestlers have said this, I think it takes a lot more talent to actually be a good guy than a bad guy. And that's why I think most guys enjoy being bad guys, because it's easy to be that heel. And I don't know, most of the time when they turn these guys good, it just comes across forced and phony, and it doesn't work. And I'm not sure about Dolph right now.
Yeah, time will tell on that one there, but I think, again, he has all the potential, and I think creative has shown so far, I think, that they know what to do with him as a face. We'll see if they can keep building on that. Going to our kind of preview of SummerSlam, which we've been kind of building to, talking about some of the ancillary players here, prior to what would be considered SummerSlam season, which I don't know if there's that's necessarily a thing, but there is a WrestleMania season always leads up to that. I felt that was underwhelming. I ordered the pay-per-view. I was one of the people that got a refund because the stream was so crappy. So I didn't see all of it, but I was underwhelmed with what I saw. A lot of rematches on there. You know, Rock, Cena, Triple H, Lesnar. I didn't really see anybody clamoring for any of those necessarily. The undercard stuff in particular, undercard, midcard, everybody always says, well, WrestleMania doesn't get sold on that. Yeah, but if you'd given us more to look forward to, like with The Shield or something else, you know, rather than this cookie-cutter stuff, it didn't seem like they gave a whole lot of thought to the undercard and the midcard at all. Notwithstanding the fact that it was in New York, it was a great atmosphere, it was a great set that they built for it, obviously, but were you as underwhelmed as I was?
Oh, very much so. Very much. I mean, it was nothing I walked away from it really enjoying, and I'll tell you a few of the things that bothered me. Maybe I'm rare in saying this. I'm so sick of The Undertaker. I'm sick of him showing up to fight once a year. And I was really sick that he had to beat CM Punk, who the WWE did such a brilliant job of building up as this not only incredible heel, but a guy who held the title for so long. You know, you're comparing him to Bruno Sammartino. You're talking about all the great title runs. And to have him lose the belt to The Rock, which is one thing, and then lose it to another guy who just swoops in every once in a while, in The Undertaker, that in itself was disappointing. I didn't think the match was that great. I just think it's over with The Undertaker. Like, I kind of felt watching that match that either don't have him wrestle and move on or have him lose. Enough of the streak. I mean, it's to beat Punk when the guy was champion for a trillion days in a row. That, number one, bothered me. And number two, Rock Cena just wasn't good. It just wasn't that good of a match, and I think the outcome was so predictable. I thought the first time they faced each other, the reason it worked for me is I didn't know who was going to win. And I think a lot of us didn't know who was going to win. I mean, I don't think it was overwhelming that The Rock was definitely going to beat John Cena. I guess we could say it after the fact. You knew going in there was no way The Rock was going to beat him again. So you're dealing with not only a match that wasn't good, but an outcome that was so predictable. And those were the two things that, you know, were the two big things of WrestleMania. Those are the two matches that I think they try to sell it on. And I think the main event didn't pay off. And I like The Rock. I do. I'm glad he came back. I just think it was too predictable. The match wasn't that good. And I'm just so sick of The Undertaker. So because of that, I don't know. WrestleMania didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I hear you. Because, again, a lot of the guys who could have played a bigger role on the show really didn't get a chance to. Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler were trapped in that tag team match against one another rather than getting some breakout possibilities doing some other things here. But, again, things have really kind of turned as we get into SummerSlam season here. I am much happier with the booking and the lead-up to it, you know, this time around. Although, again, the one thing it has in common, they're just kind of treading water with the Shield. I don't exactly know where they're going to go there. Some of that is, I guess, the health of the Big Show and whether or not he's going to be able to be back with Henry to team against the Shield. Maybe let's start there because that's kind of an interesting point. You talk about rushed turns and everything like that, and I agree with you, and they've probably had too many of them in the last year that didn't make much sense. Okay, it would be a pretty cool visual to have Big Show and Henry take on all three members of the Shield. Again, not to nitpick, but how exactly would that fit into logical storyline fashion? I don't see it.
Well, I mean, I think there's two issues. First of all, you mentioned the Shield. I like them. I think they've done a good job, but you're right. We're at the point where something else has to happen. I mean, basically, it's the same angle every once in a while. There are two, three guys they go after. There's a big six-man match. There's a big tag match. Shield wins. I think they almost have to break them apart and make them individual stars. And if they can't be individual stars, then I don't know what else you can do with them. The thing with Mark Henry was, when they did that angle with John Cena, it was one of those things, and this happens every once in a while in my opinion, where the whole buildup was brilliant and it was funny, and Henry turning, you're shocked, you're surprised, you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. And then it just kind of dulls away. I mean, Super Cena beats him. Mark Henry's kind of like, okay, where do you go from here? He basically becomes a good guy. Like, the whole turn that they did was great, and it was interesting, and it was funny, and it was unpredictable, but now Mark Henry's just nothing. So, I don't know, it happens sometimes where you have this great swerve, if you will, and then nothing happens with it, and I think that's exactly what happened to Mark Henry now, and I don't know where you go from here with him.
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense where he's sitting right now. They seem to be going towards a Henry and Ryback rematch, which that match sucked the first time around. I'm not sure anybody's clamoring to see a second one. As far as it goes with the Shield, though, will you co-sign on my notion of this? Before they break them up, I want to see Shield and Wyatt family at WrestleMania next year.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be able to hold that one out until WrestleMania, though. That would be something, but I mean, think about how much changes in wrestling over a few months, a year from now. Who the hell knows what it's going to look like with those guys, with those groups?
Exactly, because they hot-shotted the turn of Cody Rhodes against Damian Sandow. When you talk about rushed turns and things that feel really kind of forced, does it get more forced than Cody Rhodes' babyface out of nowhere?
Oh, it's terrible. It really is. And that's one thing I don't like. I mean, they used to kind of turn things when the fans indicated they wanted the turn back in the day. Now they force feed it on you. It reminds me of when they turned Randy Orton good the first time. Like, nobody really, it was forced, and nobody really wanted to cheer for the guy. Like, 2 months into him being a good guy, people were just so sick of him. I think they realized it wasn't going to work. I mean, does anybody actually care about the Sandow-Cody Rhodes feud? I mean, is anybody really that compelled by it? I can't imagine anybody really caring.
Well, and the worst thing for Cody is Damian Sandow is a hell of a lot more entertaining. So that's what puts you in a bad kind of a spot here. I don't know how smart the LA crowd's going to be, but you put that match out there enough times on TV, you risk having the crowd maybe go a little bit hipster, start cheering for Sandow. And that's the last guy I think you want to turn at this point, because he's got a lot of juice in him, I would think, as this haughty kind of snob over a period of time.
Yeah, but remember who started off like a hearty snob was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H. So sometimes you never know what's going to happen.
That's true. I don't know that he's going to have that kind of trajectory in front of him. I don't know. Maybe Vince has got another daughter out there somewhere that Damian could get behind. That might help his career arc as well.
I was thinking the exact same thing as you said that. I was like, well, does Vince have another daughter? That's the key.
Yeah. Well, he did a storyline a couple of years ago about an illegitimate son. If they were to reprise that, there was an actual daughter, then Damian might have a chance of a similar rise. World heavyweight title. We talked about ADR much better as a heel. I love Christian. I think he's great in this role. I do kind of question going with him over the red hot Rob Van Dam coming back in, who they have unfortunately kind of made as just another guy over the last couple of weeks. But this is a match that, again, looks like it suffers from a very obvious outcome, unless they're going to do some kind of short-term deal where Ricardo Rodriguez gets involved for revenge. But doesn't that match suffer from being a little bit too obvious of an outcome? Because they've got to go back to ADR and Ziggler after this.
No, you're 100% right, and I agree with you because I like Christian. I always have. I thought if things worked out differently, he could have never gone to TNA, which was probably, you know, just like, that's like going to purgatory for a couple of years. Nobody, I mean, I don't care about that. I tried to watch it, but then it just got so dumb. It's like, I literally haven't watched that in years, but I thought he had a chance to be champion before that, but he's not going to be champion now. And here's the other problem, and it goes with the fact that Alberto Del Rio retained and all that garbage. That title means nothing anymore. It's like a glorified intercontinental title. It used to be that they actually maintained having the world title and the WWE title as an equal. They really were able to keep it that way for a very long period of time, and now it's so secondary. And I'll tell you, and I think I've said this, I probably said this on your show 4 years ago, but I'll say it again. Get rid of it. Just merge the titles and have an undisputed champion. I mean, it's pointless because it really is a glorified intercontinental title. So, I don't know. It's just, it seems like they really dragged that title through the mud over the last couple of years. I like it because it's the big gold belt. It still has that history to it. But I'll tell you, I mean, it really doesn't mean nearly as much as it used to.
I certainly agree. I agree with all of that. But having said that, do you agree that what makes it even worse is, and I go back to the fall of 2011 for this, when they were doing the whole storyline with Triple H running Raw, the soft merger of everyone from SmackDown can appear on Raw now, and it's a thing where you don't really have a Raw roster and a SmackDown roster. And again, there was blurring before that, but now with the amount of blurring, it's like it's not even clear to the general public why John Cena isn't on SmackDown ever. I mean, you know and I know, and a couple of us know, okay, well, it's because the WWE title still, quote-unquote, belongs to Raw. But for the most part, you know, if you had a thing where it was more clear and distinct, this, quote-unquote, world title defended on this show, this one defended on this show against this roster, I mean, that would make it a little better, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God, absolutely. I mean, even when the rosters were separate, it was never separate enough. There was always that, like, gray area where guys would jump from show. I mean, I know why they originally did it. They had a big-time roster from the merger, and I thought they were trying to recreate WCW and the WWE without calling it WCW, by saying, oh, we've got two different shows. Oh, my God, this guy's invading that show. But they ruined it, and now it's even more ruined. And how about this fact? When John Cena was picking who his opponent was going to be, how about the fact that Alberto Del Rio was standing there hoping he was going to get picked? Why would he care about being the world champion? Like, doesn't that kind of show how secondary that title is? If Alberto Del Rio is standing on the stage hoping he's picked by John Cena, like, I think they ruined it in a lot of ways. But I don't know. Maybe it's because they're trying to pitch this to kids, and the kids have no idea what the hell's going on anyway. Maybe that's what's happening.
I agree with that completely. It was kind of jarring, though. You talk about ADR and Cena, and we'll get to Cena with the main event here, or one half of the main events here in a second. But for one night, though, Evan, for one night, they tried to put him on an even footing there when they did the champion v. champion match in the main event. And they're showing the things, and they go to commercial break, the lineage of this title, the lineage of this title, and for one night presenting them as co-equals, and then it just kind of regressed to how it was before. You can't just do that once every couple of years and get people to take both of these, at least the same neighborhood of seriousness.
No, absolutely, and I enjoyed it when they did it that night. I mean, I always enjoy, and they do this a lot more than they used to, where they kind of talk about the history of this and the history of that, like, and I understood why they did it with Bruno, but when they started bringing up and comparing Punk's record, how long he held the title, I loved it. You know, I was a long-time wrestling fan. It was nice that they talk about history. It makes it more sport-like the way, you know, when you're watching an NFL or a baseball game, they actually talk about the history of the sport, and in this case, the history of sports entertainment, if you will. But they don't do it enough. I mean, actions speak louder than a one-day thing. And for one day to get a few extra rating points on a Monday night, he put the titles on a level playing field and talked about champion versus champion. But you're right. Overall, they don't treat it like equals. So normally, they don't treat it like that. And, I mean, the day has to come where they just merge the belts and have an undisputed champion, try to have a big payday off of it. But, you know, I don't know when they're going to decide to do that.
Well, I keep hoping every year it's going to be at WrestleMania. It never happens, and at this point, who knows if it's going to. But what you're talking about there, that whole phenomenon, basically, to me, is synonymous with the term hot-shotting. And that, I think, is what they did with CM Punk, because I think that's another one of these terms. That, like, was it really completely necessary? Okay, they were doing a pay-per-view in Chicago. Well, he was out. They could have just held him out another month, not put him in the place he was going to get the big cheers and where the crowd was going to turn him. This feud with Brock has been really pretty good, but that seems to me to be something they could have held off for WrestleMania. And again, that face side of the roster is really, really, really kind of jammed up at the top. Cena, Bryan, Punk, Ziggler, who they're trying to push big time here. I know they're going to be turning Orton, but what are your thoughts on the Punk turn and how it affects this Brock match?
Well, I think it sucks because I think CM Punk is better as the renegade who's either a heel or who the hell knows what he is. Now, listen, he's a face. That's what he is. And I thought they rushed the whole Heyman CM Punk thing. I mean, they could have had them as like estranged lovers, but CM still is a Heyman guy. Heyman's still a Punk guy. And they could have dragged that out for a long time. They didn't have to rush it. I remember when they turned Batista. The best thing about the way they turned Batista is the patience they had with it. They let that story go for so long, but when he finally did turn, it was so worth it. And I think they rushed Punk, but I think in general, when a guy comes back from an injury, he always seems to come back as a good guy. I remember when Triple H came back from one of his big injuries and he entered the Royal Rumble and shockingly he won it. You know, he came back as a good guy. I think they feel like they need to do that sometimes, but they did rush Punk. And the Punk-Brosner feud, I mean, yeah, you're right. They could have kind of held it out for a longer period of time. I think Lesnar sucks. I got to be honest with you. I liked him during his run. And maybe I'm just so bitter because he ruined what could have been a great WrestleMania match with Goldberg by thinking he could play for the Minnesota Vikings and quitting. But I don't like Lesnar that much anyway. I don't know how good that program is going to be as it is.
I would agree with that, and again, you know, my sense is that Punk probably needs it more than Lesnar does at this point, although if Lesnar's going to get the Undertaker match next year, hey, at least it'll be two guys you hate in the same match, right, if it's Lesnar and the Undertaker?
That is a waste if they do the Undertaker and Lesnar. If they want to make things interesting, what they do is Undertaker-Cena. I mean, I think that would make things interesting, because even I'd be torn, because God knows I want the Undertaker streak to finally end, but God also knows I sure as hell don't want it to be Super Cena to do it. So I'll tell you, that would create I'd be confused, I'll tell you that right now.
I understand that. Well, how much would this infuriate you, the notion of, oh, we got to feed Punk to Lesnar right now to give him the credibility he needs to job to the Undertaker at WrestleMania next year? How would that be?
Oh, it would be terrible. I mean, Brock Lesnar, he's a short-term guy. Like, I mean, I know it's been longer term than maybe we thought because he's been here for over a year, but I don't know, but CM Punk's been jobbing too much lately. I mean, he had the job to The Rock. He had the job to that old decrepit Undertaker in his once-a-year match. I'm sorry to be too harsh on him. I'm an old-school guy myself, but I've had enough of him. And maybe it's the fact I never really liked The Undertaker. I thought his gimmick was stupid. He's a dopey Undertaker. I mean, seriously. When I was 9 years old, as I was nine when he first came into the WWE, I couldn't stand him. I wanted Hogan to kill him. I wanted him to crush him. And I still can't believe that such a dopey gimmick became so popular. And listen, I may be 1% of the population thinking this, but, I mean, he's an Undertaker. That's his job, and he's been a wrestler for a million years. Give me a break.
Yeah, kind of a throwback to the whole, garbage man by day, wrestler by night period of the 90s that they had there. In the other main event match, Daniel Bryan v. Cena. Again, for all the rabid Daniel Bryan fans like myself, this is a little slice of Nirvana, getting to see him get this run at the top here. I don't get the sense that the match can possibly live up to the expectations that everybody has, the expectations, of course, being Money in the Bank 11, Punk and Cena. I think we're all just, too much anticipating this for it to live up to that, but I think it can be great. Well, what's your sense of how the match is going to go and whether or not Randy Orton's going to be involved at the end and the Goofy McMahon stuff?
Well, I think he almost has to get involved now. I mean, they're teasing it too much with Orton. The problem is, I'm excited because I like Daniel Bryan. I think, like most people, I think he's interesting. I think he's different. I think he's exciting. He's obviously over. There's no question. And I'm sick of Cena, but maybe I'm wrong here. I think Daniel Bryan already having the championship once and then being completely jobbed at WrestleMania in his nine-second embarrassment or whatever it was, it almost takes away from the quote-unquote Hobbit, as Vince calls him, winning the title and beating John Cena. That he's already been champion. I don't know if they're trying to make us forget that, but he's already been at the, quote, top of the mountain. But I think Orton's going to get involved somehow. If I had to make a prediction, here's what I'd say happens. I think Daniel Bryan beats John Cena, believe it or not. I think he's champion. I think that Randy Orton then goes into cash in the Money in the Bank, and I think Cena stops him from successfully doing it. So, like, I think in that way it makes Cena the good guy again because he helped Daniel Bryan, and then I think it creates some type of triangle between the three of them with Bryan getting the victory, making people happy, but Cena being the ultimate good guy who stopped Randy Orton from cashing in an absolute certain championship victory. That's my prediction for what happens at SummerSlam.
Interesting, yeah, and that sets you up for Night of Champions in September and beyond. Well, great talking NFL and SummerSlam here with you today. Evan, always a pleasure. Of course, WFAN, middays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Folks should always check that out, and of course can do so as well online, WFAN.com. Really appreciate it as always, my man. Looking forward to the next time we catch up.
Absolutely, always a pleasure. Have a good one.
Thank you so much, brother. Appreciate it. Evan Roberts, WFAN in New York, the great one. We appreciate it. Thank you for tuning in. FDH Lounge, mini episode number 289.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.